Good morning. May it please the court, Michael Bekesha on behalf of appellant Vern McKinley. In December 2008, Mr. McKinley, a private citizen, submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System concerning the board's decision to authorize the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to extend credit to J.P. Morgan to provide emergency financing to Bear Stearns. In response to Mr. McKinley's request, the board withheld approximately 80% of its responsive records. At issue today is the board's withholdings under exemptions 5 and 8. Not only is it essential that the board produce the improperly withheld records to shed light on the underlying justifications of the first of a series of bailouts, but it is also important that the court not abandon precedent and create new case law by adopting the board's arguments.
So is it your contention that these documents will show the underlying justifications for the decision that the board made? Is that what you just said?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. McKinley. Well, that sounds like the type of information they relied upon before they made their decision. We call that pre-decisional, right?
It is, Your Honor. The information.
It sounds like Exemption 5, doesn't it? Like this is tailor-made for Exemption 5.
Yes, Your Honor. It sounds as though it would be exempt under Exemption 5, and we do not disagree that the information is pre-decisional.
Right.
Mr. McKinley asserts that the material is not deliberative in nature, though. And the reason for that is this court's precedent. In National Institute, this court
that the material is not deliberational. By whom? Did the board use this information to make its decision?
The board didn't use this information
It did,
Your Honor.
Yeah.
However,
whose deliberation are we concerned about here?
The deliberation of the board, Your Honor. However, right. To be deliberative in nature, there has to be a harm analysis. The precedent, starting with the Dudman case in 1987, makes it clear that for information to be withheld pursuant to the deliberative process, the disclosure of the materials would expose the agency's decision-making process in such a way as to discourage candid discussion with the agency and thereby undermine the agency's decision-making ability. This was cited in formaldehyde and most recently in National Institute. So, although
there was no analysis in Dudman, it just said that that's what these kind of things do.
Inherent, that's the reason.
And in Klamath, which is the Supreme Court's opinion, it says, deliberative process privilege rests on the obvious realization that officials will not communicate candidly among themselves if each remark is a potential item of discovery in front page news. That doesn't sound like there's an analysis. That does sound like our precedents and the Supreme Court says that once it's deliberative, that is, once it's used for deliberation and once it's pre-decisional, then it's obvious that it's the kind of thing that will injure free flow of information.
However, numerous decisions are made every day at an agency, and there are deliberations that take place whether or not to create a document, whether or not to put a document.
Your standard would ask the courts in each of these cases to go in and to decide what the nature of the harm was?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
Right now we have, as I understand the precedent, a pretty bright line rule. If it's deliberative and pre-decisional, it's harmful. That's why we have the exemption in the first place. Right, but it seems to me that what you're arguing for us to do is to look beyond that and to say, no, you have to show not only if it's deliberative and pre-decisional, but the government has to identify in what way harm took place. That seems quite onerous.
And not necessarily in what way, but make the argument, show that harm to the decision-making process.
I don't point out. I mean, there's a presumption here that there is harm, that if you're an agency and involved in decision-making process, if that's going to be disclosed, that you're going to trim your sails and not give the type of opinion that would be in the best interest of the agency of the government.
And that
the harm is presumed here.
We don't believe that harm should be presumed or is presumed under the case law.
So what would the board have to show here?
The board
would have to show here
Similar to other cases, the board would have to demonstrate, usually by declaration, that the release of this material, that the disclosure of the information would cause harm in future decision-making efforts, such as these employees would not provide similar discussion, would not provide their analysis of the information.
I thought that was the judgment Congress had made and was the premise of the entire exemption.
It's the premise of the entire exemption, but I don't believe Congress sought for such a broad statute. But as long as it's pre-decisional and it can be claimed to be deliberative, that therefore this material cannot be released.
Well, you cite our en banc opinion in Wolf on page 16 of your brief for the proposition that the burden of demonstrating that disclosure would be likely to have adverse effects on agency decision-making falls on the government, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the support for the proposition you're making. So you're going along with Judge Wald's position in that case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, Judge Wald's the dissent in that case. And the majority opinion, which is written by Judge Bork, says to the contrary, quote, it would be impossible for courts to administer a rule of law to the effect that some but not all information about the decisional process may be disclosed without violating Exemption 5. Courts would become enmeshed in a continual process of estimating, or more accurately, guessing about the adverse effects on the decisional process of a great variety of combinations of pieces of information. That sounds like exactly the point Judge Griffith was making. And I guess if we have a choice between Judge Bork and Judge Wald, where Judge Bork is the majority on an en banc decision, we have to go with Judge Bork.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I'd also like to point out that Wolf was decided in 1988. And starting in 1987 and moving to the present, this circuit has shifted in its position to make the exemptions more narrow, to make them more focused, because otherwise the FOIA statute would become a withholding statute instead of a disclosure statute. Well,
even if that were correct, we couldn't overturn an en banc decision, even a subsequent decision. I mean, our general rule is that the earlier opinion, if it's inconsistent with a later opinion, has to control, otherwise a subsequent panel is overruling an earlier panel. But more significantly here, we have Judge Bork's en banc opinion, and certainly it's without the authority of any panel to overrule an en banc opinion. So if that were the case, and I don't see Dudman as saying that, but if that were the case, we would have a real, I mean, this would be an argument you might make for en banc review, but it wouldn't be an argument you can make to a panel.
That may be correct, Your Honor, but if I can shift over to the discussion about the consulting corollary, I don't believe that we even get to this argument in this discussion. The board has not shown that FRB New York is a consultant to the board. And for that matter, they have not shown that FRB New York is a consultant to the SEC. In National Institute, this court stated that information that may be withheld under the interagency communication.
Who sought the information here? Who was the first? Who's the prime mover here? There's information out there. Who was the first one who wanted it and asked for it?
Which agency, Your Honor?
It was the board, right? The board reached out to the Federal Reserve.
That's unclear, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record to state that the board picked up the phone and called FRB New York and asked for this information.
I think FRB New York approached them and is part of a lobbying effort.
SEC may have approached FRB New York. These were, unprecedented times. Things were moving at a mile a minute, and it is unclear from the declarations who approached who made the first phone call. At the trial court, we laid out, tried to lay out a timeline.
How did the bank in New York's interest diverge from the board's interest here?
It diverged in that they had to have their own finding. There were two separate processes. The Federal Reserve Board authorized FRB New York to extend credit, and then FRB New York had to make a determination and choose.
These are all part of the same effort, right? And that was to get money to Bear Stearns.
Right? It could be, yes. I mean, in hindsight, it looks as though that's the way it went. However, there's nothing in the declarations that stated from the onset the board sought this information from FRB New York. that the SEC sought this information from FRB New York. All it says is that information was gathered and a decision was made. There's also...
Don't you have to show, to avoid the consultant corollary, don't you have to show that their interests were divergent, that the Bank of New York had different interests than did the board?
The government, Your Honor, the government has to show that FRB New York's interests were the same as the Federal Reserve's. They did not do that.
Doesn't the statutory relationship between the Federal Reserve banks and the board, isn't that enough to establish that, at least in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, that the Federal Reserve banks operate as the operating arms of the board for purposes of just this kind of crisis?
FRB New York is an operating arm of the board.
Not only is it an operating arm, but the members of the Board of Governors are on the board.
Yes, Your Honor. However,
it's a nonprofit. It doesn't have its own interests involved here.
But it has its own interests. It has its own rules and regulations, and their statutory authority on what the Federal Reserve banks perform for the Board of Governors. One of those is to collect data. There's nothing in the statute that talks about opinions, analysis, helping make decisions. The statutes are very specific, they're very narrow on when the FRB New York acts as a private bank and when it acts as part of the Federal Reserve System.
When does it act as a private, when you say a private bank, in what sense does it act as a private bank?
It is a depository institution for banks in their region.
But not for customers or anything else. It's in order to help control the banking system. It's not to make money for its stockholders or anything like that.
It also extends credit to banks. That's correct.
But it's not, again, when you say it's a private bank, that sounds like it has some commercial interest in raising money or something. It doesn't have anything like that. It's only to keep the banking system stable. Am I wrong about that?
It's one of its main components is to keep the banking system stable.
There's no component of which is to make money. Or am I wrong?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I would need to clarify and look back on whether or not it does make money.
What about the Stephenson Declaration, which goes into great detail about many things, including that they jointly, that is Federal Reserve and Federal Reserve New York and the other member banks, jointly monitor these large complex banking organizations, the LCBOs, and advise the board on the financial condition. I mean, they have all sorts of joint responsibilities, and her declaration says that the triggering in March of 2008, when they got the word that Bear Stearns was about to declare bankruptcy, that the board and Reserve Bank staff surveyed the institutions that were subject to them to see just what was going to happen with this. I mean, that's clear enough as far as we may not know who made the phone call, but it was between the Federal Reserve and Federal Reserve New York trying to figure out whether they should allow J.P. Morgan to lend to Bear Stearns.
But also, excuse me, Your Honor, but also part of this consulting and determining what was going to happen during that time also took place with the SEC, as well as with J.P. Morgan and bankers from J.P. Morgan. So it wasn't just the board and FRB New York that was trying to figure out what was going to happen, what was the next step.
You would clearly be right if they were trying to protect J.P. Morgan documents as deliberate as if J.P. Morgan was a consultant. But they're not doing that, right? Those aren't the documents at issue here.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's only communications between FRB New York and the SEC, FRB New York, the Federal Reserve, and any variation on that. And Mr. McKinley's argument is that these materials the government has not demonstrated, provided no evidence that this information was solicited by the board, that FRB New York had no interests of its own during this period of time, or...
Just gotta get clear. I'm sorry to be obtuse about this, but what is the interest of the bank that you think is its own? What are you proffering as the interest of its own? Other than, yes, I take your point, it has a responsibility to make a judgment about whether to make a loan, but why is that an interest of its own. Normally, when you think about, when we use that phrase in the consultancy cases, we're talking about, you know, a for-profit consulting company that may have an interest different than the government's. But I'm not seeing a suggestion here that, I don't know, that the Federal Reserve Bank in New York was corrupt or had some independent interest or anything like that. That's what I'm not seeing. What is the interest you're asking us to think about?
The actual interest is not at issue, Your Honor. Under FOIA, under the statute, under the case law of the circuit, the burden is on the government to show that there were no separate interests. It is not the burden of the private citizen.
Right. Why isn't it enough for the government to proffer the statutory framework of the relationship between the board and the banks and the affidavit that Judge Henderson suggested, and at that point to have met at least its burden, and now it's your turn to suggest something different? I take it you're not suggesting anything different. You stand on the position we don't have to say why their interests are different.
Well, fundamentally the interests are somewhat different on the simple fact that FRB New York could have not extended the loan. For whatever reason, they could have chose not to extend the loan that they were authorized to extend. It's harder to articulate what their interest was because in hindsight, it seems as though each party was working together. But the statute doesn't talk about in hindsight were their interests aligned. It was at that moment when each had different statutory responsibility. What was going on? What was taking place? Why were they doing it? And that's the issue. The issue isn't, well, it looks like their interests were aligned because they chose to extend the credit. But were their interests aligned at that time when they both had very distinct statutory responsibility? And also, Judge Garland, to further up on your point, follow up, the statutory authority only goes so far in the relationship. If the relationship was such that it was a consultant or such that it made it look as though FRB New York is part of the government, then FRB New York would be an agency. It would be an agency under the law. It would be an agency under FOIA, but it's not. Mm-hmm. So we believe that at some point that relationship stopped.
That's a good point.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Chaffetz.
Samantha Heifetz for the United States. I think as the panel's questions reflect, this really is a situation far easier than many of the consultant corollary cases that this circuit has encountered before because of the relationship between the board and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that's at issue here and reflected in the statutory framework. The particular arguments that have been raised by the plaintiff and were addressed here, solicitation, the divergent interests, essentially what we wind up with, I believe, is a situation in which the Federal Reserve Board is being asked to prove a negative. We've put forth ample evidence of a statutory nature and as a factual matter that really reflects the way in which the organizations here, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the Federal Reserve Board, were working together with the Federal Reserve Bank, providing its analyses and the information it had gathered to the board for its decision making. There's no dispute here that the information was pre-decisional. Indeed, there's no dispute that it was deliberative. That really ends the inquiry. If there are questions from the panel, I'd be very happy to address them.
I've got a question about the Bloomberg case from the Second Circuit.
Yes.
And why the exemption 5, I think at the district court level you both agreed there was exemption 5, and then the government didn't pursue that on appeal, and the documents were released. What is the difference between your position here and there?
The case ultimately, as I understand it, was an exemption 4 case, and there were materials.
The 5. That's what I don't understand, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's a difference, and I apologize that I'm not as familiar with that case because it ultimately did not go off on Exemption 5, and I'd be happy to provide the court with follow-up supplemental letter if that would be useful, as I wasn't privy to the decision-making that went on. But I think that the source of the materials, as I understand it, was not the same. The relationship between the materials that were issued did not travel the same path as they traveled here. But again, Your Honor, I apologize. I'm not as familiar with that case as I might be, and I'd be happy to provide supplemental information if that would be useful.
Well, I mean, from looking at the opinion, it looks like the information at issue there, which was the identity of the borrowing bank, the dollar amounts of the loans, the loan origination and maturity dates, and the collateral securing the loan, those don't sound deliberative, right? Those are fact documents obtained, but they were being withheld under Exemption 4, I guess, on the...
That is correct. As confidential information. But I think also...
But in the district court, both the board and Bloomberg agreed that they were interagency or intra-agency memos. I don't have a case.
No, I agree with you. Absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And I was just wondering whether it seems
also
like maybe
contextual,
on appeal...
I think the context is quite critical. So to the extent that there's any of the same types of information are at issue here, what we know is that we're dealing with... I would be happy to provide follow-up to better describe the differences between the two cases, given that they were, I know, treated very differently by the Justice Department litigating those cases and by the court as well. And certainly, I think, as I understand it, that reflects both the path that information flowed and the nature of the information and the role that it played in the decision-making or how it related to the decision-making process.
Well, just to be clear and to follow up with Judge Henderson, because I had the same interest. I assume that any document that was turned over there at the direction of the court would be turned over to the plaintiffs here. This is FOIA.
If it was the same...
Same documents would have to be turned over to any FOIA requester. We're getting a big nod over here.
Yeah, I don't see any basis on there being a distinction. I'm just not familiar with any documents that were precisely the same that were found to be relevant in both cases. So I'm not aware that there is any overlap of that nature.
Thank you. Any time? All right, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to reiterate that this case comes down to the failure to present any evidence by the board to satisfy the burdens put forth by FOIA. Does the court have any questions about Exemption 8 and the argument there? Otherwise, I'll conclude.
On that one there, that's just a subset of the documents, right?
A significant subset, but it is a subset. The board withheld documents under claims of Exemption 5 almost completely, and a majority of those documents were also withheld under Exemption 8.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.